friends. Welcome to the Walking with Kelly and Christy podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Christy. We are two sisters who love Jesus, and we are committed to walking out our faith one step at a time. In this season, we are discussing what walking in our calling looks like and what walking in our true identity is all about. Welcome back to the Walking with Kelly and Christy podcast. We are so glad you have decided to spend a few minutes with us today as we continue in this season about walking in our calling and our true identity. We believe that God has uniquely called you and me to know and to do some specific things that bring Him glory in this life. We are on a journey ourselves of understanding our calling and walking in it confidently. As we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, we can continue to walk in confidence, trusting Him and His ways. Our circumstances might change, but who we are never changes.
So good. Yeah, and we are so excited today to have a very distinguished guest with us. I have known Dr. Linda Karchesbone for 30 years now. I have watched her. I've been inspired by her in person as a CSU student and from afar as I watch on social media how she loves her family well and she creatively impacts people wherever she goes. And Chris, that's a lot of places. And in any endeavor she commits to. God has used her to transform and inspire children, students, teachers, parents, and so many others throughout her life. And just a personal story. I remember being in college, and you were my professor for many classes. You were in charge of practicums and student teaching. But when I think back, I felt loved by you. I felt encouraged. I felt like you thought I was a good student and you thought I would be a good teacher. And so you know what that did for me? That encouraged me to work harder, to please, to do better, to be the best I can be. And Chris, as you and I are learning about walking in our calling and looking at people who we see walk in their calling, like they're free to love.
Good.
They're free to encourage and inspire. They're not self-protecting and self-promoting. They want what's best for the community. And
so
Dr. Bone, I feel that even now from you.
Well, thank you, Kelly. You know, it. Everyone wants to be seen. If you think back a number of years ago to the movie Avatar about the blue people.
Yeah.
You'll remember, avatars greet one another in a very specific way. They say, "I see you." And across many cultures in all parts of the world, there are variations of that greeting that translate to "I see you," which means I see that authentic you. And I was traveling with my plastic brain here, and there are actually pieces in the prefrontal cortex called mirror neurons behind the eyes that allow us to connect and to see the emotional intelligence of other humans. So I'm thinking that's what you saw.
I felt.
But I've got to say, you always were a star. So it wasn't hard with you. It wasn't hard with you, baby. You were one of my stars.
Thanks. Well, I could probably go on for 30 minutes, the whole podcast, sharing about your accomplishments and your achievements and your impacting of people. But we really want you to share. And Christy, you're going to introduce a few highlights of her amazing life.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Linda Cargis-Bone is a nationally recognized speaker, author, and consultant on the topics of creativity, differentiated instruction, and brain-body connections. She is Professor Emeritus of Education at Charleston Southern University and earned her education degree at the University of South Carolina in curriculum and instruction. Dr. Bone is the author of over 30 books in the fields of curriculum and assessment, including her most recent Brain Tips and Rich Brain, Poor Brain. She has delivered keynotes and workshops in 45 states through her consulting firm, Education Insight, including the last seven National Title I ESEA conferences that advance the work of high poverty schools.
Wow.
Linda's work blends research and cognitive science with practical applications for use among educators and parents. Her unique blend of stories and research reflect years teaching future teachers and even a recent stint subbing for a second grade teacher. Yes, she can still teach real kids. That is awesome. Dr. Bone connects with the public through media, including years of programming on the local CBS affiliate and her original radio program, Prayerful Parenting.
I remember.
Yes, those one-minute messages of inspiration and research, which you've done for over 25 years. Linda and her husband, Gary, live in coastal South Carolina with their rescue dog, Roxy, and they have two grown daughters. We just want y'all to know that you can find out more at www.educationinsight.com.
Wow, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, so let me just set up a quite, and then we want you to talk. One of the things you're currently in the process of doing is writing a collection of short stories that document your life growing up in a large Catholic Italian family. And how your relationship with your grandparents were so significant. And many of those experiences have shaped who you are. And I would love just for you to share a little bit about your memories of working at a summer camp. And that wasn't always what you expected it to be. And how at 18... God began to give you opportunities and leadership roles surrounding every aspect of the camp. And it changed you and the lives of many others. How did that affect your calling in life?
Well, thank you, Kelly and Christy. I'm excited about being here and talking about how our walk in life, how our relationship with God specifically fuels things and feeds our strength, our energy. So you kicked off talking about what I'm currently writing. And I, over the last couple of years, and even one recently during Holy Week was just published online, I've been writing about what I remember about spending time in Astoria, Queens, an Italian-Greek neighborhood in New York City, with my grandparents, Michael and Anna Laporta, immigrants from Sicily. Mm-hmm. And I think what's been coming to me and what the stories reflect is the strength of my grandmother, Anna Peretti Laporta, one of 11 children born to her mother. Only two lived. She was one of two. Her mother died when she was 2 years old. Her father hid her in the apartment. They had come to the U.S., hid her because they knew she would be taken away because he was working was, I think, a stonemason at that point, leaving her alone. And eventually she was put into an orphanage, grew up in an orphanage, and married my grandfather when she was very, very young. And there's a story in the family, and I'm a petite little woman. there's a story in the family that they were at City Hall in New York City to get the marriage license. And in the state of New York, they would weigh you as part of the documentation. And she only weighed, I think, 96 pounds. And so my grandfather said to her in Italian, "Well, I want my money back, my $5 or whatever for the license, because I didn't get 100 pounds worth of a wife." And I just love that story because I think it reflects this. Of course, she was horrified at the time. And but it just reflects, you know, we sometimes feel that we're limited by our size and the space we take up and our age and our, she never went to school, but became extremely successful. They built a three-floor brownstone home in New York, raised a successful family, overcame so many obstacles. And so in writing these stories about what I remember specifically about her, she was just so tough. She was just so tough. And we talk about balancing work and family.
Yeah.
One of the memories that I remember her telling me was that you never left your children with strangers, only with family. And so they both worked in a cookie factory in Brooklyn and would take a train there. But they would meet at the corner by the subway. Cause they worked different shifts. So she would work. And then she'd walk to the corner and meet Grandpa, and then he would go to work in the cookie factory. But someone was always home with the children.
Yeah.
So you made it work. And we think we have it hard, right?
With nannies
and child care. But how about the cookie factory? And in one of the latest stories, I remembered when the machine ate part of her arm and mangled her arm. And but she still kept working and still kept going. So that kind of toughness is what I'm attempting to capture.
Right.
I still have her change purse in my purse, this little beaded purse. And I remember her telling me that you always, as a woman, needed to have your own money. Mm-hmm. That men were fine, but you needed to have your own money.
Right.
And your own way. And Kelly, you may remember this, that I would tell the girls, and I have had this problem with you because you were always committed to your education, but I'd get very upset if any of my young ladies in the teacher ed program would tell me that they were going to drop out and not finish. They were going to get married. And I've been married 45 years. It's good stuff. I like it. It's fine. But it's you need to have that teaching credential.
Yeah.
You don't know what life is going to throw at you. And you need to be able to support yourself. I believe that very strongly.
Right.
And getting that education, getting that credential. I kept my teaching credential for the state up until about a year ago.
Wow.
Just in case I ever wanted to go back and teach in public school again.
Yeah.
Because you just never know.
Yeah.
So, but then you asked about camp, summer camp. That really was a defining experience. When I was 18 years old, I was director of a summer day camp for special needs children here in Dorchester County. This would have been, 1978 or so. And to really understand how that's even possible or legal or advisable at any level, you got to understand that it was basically the Wild West here, still in the South, many parts of the country. And what had happened was a movement where children who had been incarcerated basically in institutions, Down syndrome children, for example, children of just moderate levels of disability, cerebral palsy, lots of things. They were in centers, and there was a huge movement taking children out of these institutions and having them live at home. And an organization called the Association for Retarded Citizens, that was the name of it, started in Ohio. They started the first special ed classes in the country. They believed that children could live at home. And if they were going to live at home, they had to have a public school classroom to go to, but they needed socialization. The ideas of mainstreaming, of inclusion, these things did not exist. They were non-existent. And So these summer programs began using state and federal money where we would have a bus and we would go around, we'd pick up children, and for 6 weeks there would be a summer day camp. Mine was Camp Joy. Charleston County was Camp Hope. And what happened was I had been a volunteer and then a counselor in high school, started dating the director, an older man, 4 years older. He was actually, you know, what was he, like 22 or whatever. Well, he got hired away by Camp Hope. They paid more money in Charleston. And he told the board that I would be a great director. And I was excited. So I go to my first board meeting. And if you've never been around a board of a nonprofit, I don't think they've changed much. You've got a couple of old ladies who used to be teachers, bossy old ladies, an accountant who's somebody's husband or cousin to do the books for the board, and some kind of a minister or rabbi who's on the board, you know, for a person of substance. So there I am with these old people, and I'm excited about being this camp director. I thought it was going to be all about setting up schedules and you know, riding on the bus and taking them roller skating. And one of the old ladies handed me a big yellow envelope, and she said, Linda, she said, this was like in February, and she said, Linda, we don't have camp unless you get the grant. Mm. I said, what do you mean? And she handed me the envelope. She said, you have to get the grant. You have to get the money first, or you don't have a job and we don't have camp. And I was an English major at that point, College of Charleston. I considered myself a good writer. And I knew the word grant as a verb. I'll grant you this, I'll grant you that. Right. I was not yet familiar with the term as a noun. So I opened the envelope, and I was telling Kelly and Christy a little earlier, this organization, this nonprofit, was housed upstairs in an unheated, unair-conditioned attic at St. Paul's mm-hmm. Anglican, where I'm now an active person at St. Paul's. But there was a manual typewriter. I'm drinking Tab and Fresco, which is what we drank in the 70s. It was our nectar. And I read the directions, and I thought about what I wanted. And I'm still teaching grant writing. I've written 3 books on grant writing, one of which is considered, you know, a very substantial document in the field. And I just figured out that I would tell the story, the narrative, and in the budget, I would lay out how much money I needed. And I began writing grants, and not just the one they handed me, but I realized there were lots of people who would give you money if you would type things on a typewriter and put a stamp on it. I wasn't of legal age, so the old lady on the board had to sign it and send it in, and the checks began to arrive. And over the course of 5 years, we went from serving like 42 children to 150 children. Wow. There was a weekend rec program during the year, not just the summer program. We bought used vans. We bought a huge orange bus. It was amazing.
Wow.
What I learned about planning, about trusting God. I mean, there were mornings when the big orange bus wouldn't start. I learned how to ask people for money. I'm an active volunteer with Water Mission and remain one of their top fundraisers. I just finished year 15 of my team and raised $15,000 for year 15, and I have no problem asking people for money. And so I would just ask people. I knew we didn't have enough money to fix the orange bus, so I would ask somebody's dad, who I knew was a mechanic, would he fix the bus? If I wanted ice cream for the 100 children, I would write a letter and ask, you know, Coburg Dairy for ice cream. And They would send someone with ice cream sandwiches that had been squished, but were still good. Right. Boxes and boxes. Wow. And, you know, that kind of energy. That. I don't know if that's helpful.
That's so helpful.
That's so perfect, because that seems like such a foundation to what you ended up doing in life. That's perfect.
And I'm so encouraged, because it's a reminder that God gives us an identity. He calls us by name.
Yes.
And then when we start to recognize that we are maybe walking in it,
yes,
like the confidence and the boldness
yes.
becomes more evident to even ourselves, because we know it's not really our strength. He's making a way. We're walking in it.
Exactly.
And we're learning as we go.
Yes.
I am encouraged already.
Yes. And the camp had such a, I was telling, Kelly had read a story I written recently about memories of that. And what provoked it was I was serving at the tea room at St. Paul's and ran into the mother of one of my junior counselors who now has like a master's in nursing. And I remembered her and she was surprised I remembered her. I said, don't you remember at the ER that day where one of the children who was nonverbal and very aggressive, her daughter was like 14, was a junior counselor, and just bit the heck out of her, took a chunk out of her arm when she was trying to change the diaper of a 9-year-old. That's the level of work we were doing. Wow. Without training,
right.
But we just, if they said, can you take these children? We said, yeah, we'll take them. And so we did. And she said, how, you remember her? I said, she was so brave. And you met me at the ER and they sewed her up and she was at work the next morning. And wow. I think that's why she is who she is. Tim Lajeski, one of the counselors, is Monsignor Lajeski. There are others who are ordained ministers, doctors, superintendents of education across the state, directors of special education, so many wow. teachers, therapists, yeah. coaches. I mean, it was kind of like, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Right. New York.
Yeah.
If you can make it at Camp Joy,
right,
you could make it anywhere.
Right.
And they did.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we have a few more questions for you.
We are loving our conversation with Dr. Linda Karchis-Bone. And if you are in need of a keynote speaker or training, we would love for you to consider her.
Thank you, Kelly and Christy. Education Insight, insite.com, is my website, so you can see and hear snippets of what I do and offer. I come to your site, SITE, and give you insights, IGHT. I thought it was clever. nobody really gets it now, but I've spoken in 45 of 50 states, so I guess it's working. I do training for schools and nonprofits on everything from creativity to neurodivergent issues, assessment issues. I also speak at clubs, organizations. I've spoken at political conferences for women, retreats, those sorts of things, and a lot of work in public, private school, and homeschooling organizations, training teachers and parents.
Thank you, Dr. Bone. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to the podcast, and we would love for Dr. Bone to continue sharing with us how to walk in your calling confidently. And we would love to know, is there a specific time where you really felt God's call on your life in a certain area?
I do, Kelly and Christy, think of something that was a seminal moment. You'd go back about, I guess, over 25 years now, and I had begun doing some speaking training. You have to remember, we didn't have cell phones and such things, but I had done a parenting workshop at Trident Medical Center. We had like 100 people there, and it was a good workshop talking about being better parents, those sorts of things. And I'd stayed late to have a cup of coffee and talk with the director and clean up. And I was paged to the nurse's station desk, because remember, no cell phones. If you wanted to find someone, you had to page them at the hospital. So they paged me, and I go to the desk, of course, thinking that one of my kids was sick or something at home with my husband. And it was one of the parents who had been at the workshop, a wealthy, important person in the community who owned a string of radio stations, and he and his wife had been there. listening to me. And he said, Linda, while we were doing the presentation, there was an incident in the community, a tragedy. A young man had been in a sort of tough neighborhood in North Charleston, had been riding his bike home from a Bible study, and he was accosted and robbed and killed by teenagers. He was a teenager, and teenagers did this. And I told my wife, she was with me, we need to get on the air tomorrow and talk about what's going on with our young people and what's going on with families and some guidance. So I had two little children then. So it would have been, they were little now. They're 37 and 40 now. So this, it was quite a bit. It was longer ago than I think. And so I said to him, well, I really can't because I have these two tiny children and I can't, I don't have a sitter or anything. And I got to teach tomorrow at the college. It was Baptist College back then. He said, no, we'll just call you at home. So I had them literally one in a high chair and one running around. I'm in a bathrobe and I get on the phone. And what was supposed to be a 15-minute question and answer during the drive time in the morning, an hour and a half later, people were still calling the station wanting to talk to me, wanting to ask me questions, wanting me to help them. So he said, we need to talk. He called me the next day and he offered me my own show with real money, which was important at that time because I was driving back and forth to USC working on my doctorate. And I had given up public school. I took a $10,000 pay cut leaving public school to teach at a small college. So not only had I taken this huge pay cut, had two little children, and now, you know, more money on this doctorate. So I was like, I should be making more money, not lose money. So anyway, he offers me this job. It sounded great. I love to talk. Some of you know, I ended up doing 15 years on the midday show with Mike Hyatt. Loved that. So he said, yeah, I want to give you your own show. And, you know, we talk about issues every week and then take questions. I said, all right. And, I said, what do you have in mind? And he says, well, I want you to be like, at that point, Dr. Ruth was very famous. He said, I want you to be like the Dr. Ruth, but not about intimacy issues. I want you to talk about kids. All right, fine. And so we're talking and I mentioned the word, you know, I think it'd be great, you know, maybe every week, every session, I would have a scripture that would sort of leave the parents with. And there was this silence. And he said, no. He said, this is, you know, this is a series of different stations, but, you know, he said, this is not Christian radio. This is, you can't do that. None of that. I just need you to be, you know, Dr. Linda and answer their questions and help them. And I remember thinking, but it, there are things that they're just not as good as God's word. If you're asking me to help people, I got to be able, I wasn't talking about being a Bible teacher. I was talking about telling people at times, you know, pray with your children, pray about a problem in your marriage, whatever it is. Here's a scripture that might be helpful. Okay. No. So I'm driving to work at the Baptist College at that point. If those of you who are listening who are local, you're down at 78 and you're going to take the left into the CSU, the right to the hospital. There was no light there. So you just took your life in your hands and tried to. So I'm waiting there late as usual to turn into Baptist College. And I'm praying about this thing. I want the money. I wanted the show. I wanted my own Linda show. And it was one of those things where you hear the voice, only it's not a voice. It's just like it's, you hear it in your head. And what it said was, if you do it for anybody, do it for me. Wow. That's what it said.
Wow.
That was it. There was no drum roll. If you do it for anybody, do it for me. Wow. So fine. I called at that point WKCL Christian Radio, which was the only show at that point. This woman named Betty, she's dead now. She did the morning show in the weather. Never met her. Didn't know anybody there. But I just called them. And I told her that I felt like I needed to talk to someone about doing a radio program on parenting issues. I'd been asked to do one, but they wouldn't let me talk about God. And this woman, this Betty, said, we've been waiting for you to call.
Wow.
I said, what? I don't know any of you. She said, we know you. We've been waiting for you. Wow. So I go in there and he says, you know, there's no money. you do this, what do you want to do? And I said, well, since there's no money, I can't hire a babysitter. My husband worked all the time as an engineer. And I said, I don't know. I guess I can't, if you know, I can't do the call in, you know, every week having to come somewhere, all of that. He said, no, what, tell me, let's think about, what do you want to do? And at that point, James Dobson was doing, he was the big thing. And he said, what if you just wrote 1 minute messages and we would tape them like every 3 months while your kids were at Mother's Morning Out or whatever. So you write them,
wow,
1 minute message, and we'll come in, we'll put the music and all, but you just come in and like every 3 months, tape enough for 3 months. He said, let's start with a couple for Christmas. So we did, and they ended up immediately having more sponsors than even the money guy and Dobson.
I remember those.
They did. Welcome to Prayerful Parenting.
Yes. Yeah.
Today, yes, we're going to talk about sibling rivalry. And that's how it went. And I just kept doing them. So and
good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Had no idea. No idea how long, you know, I wrote too much in the beginning because 60 seconds when you have the music beginning and end is a lot less.
Yeah.
But I always wanted a piece of research because I didn't want them to be weak. And like, I'm not a pastor's wife. I'm not right. that girl. You know, I'm a professor
right.
who believes in God. And so I wanted a piece of research, a piece of scripture, and a practical idea. So I'm hoping that we can talk about some practical things before we finish today about what is a woman to do if she feels called or she's feeling stuck or right. wherever right. she is. So
well,
what do you
this
think?
Leads right to my next question for
yeah,
you.
Sure.
Because I have seen the impact and the leadership that you have had on Kelly's life. We've already talked. She was a student education mm-hmm. major. And I'm the gardener out of the two of us. Yes. And it's gardening season.
Yes.
You know, we've put seeds in the ground yes. and there's growth starting to take place. And so I just wanted to, I'm just reminded of all of these things, you going back and telling us how your story got started, how God placed a call on your life. And you just walked in that daily obedience to what he was calling you to do. And you know, maybe there wasn't big money in it, but the benefit and the growth and the impact is huge. And I only know Kelly, and yeah. I know how huge that one impact has been on my life and the people around me and our community. And so my question for you is, you know, seeds get planted from a very early age in our lives,
mm-hmm.
but every season new seeds are being sown into us, whether we realize it or not. And sometimes it takes years before we see the beautiful and abundant fruit that those young seedlings actually possess inside. So what message or seed do you want our listeners to take away from today's conversation that they can plant in their own hearts?
I think, you know, I'm tempted to try to say something inspiring, but I think it's important to remain curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
It's important to remain curious in life. And we had talked at the break, some of us here together, about the negative impacts of social media mm-hmm. that I think freezes women, yeah. especially, you know, I'm not going to have the group of women over for a Bible study at my house because my house doesn't look like that chick on Instagram.
Right.
Or, you know, my charcuterie platter is from Publix. And yes. so that's what you're getting. You know what? Make a cup of coffee, sit down, and just be curious.
That's so good.
Just try. Have that conversation with people. People want to be seen.
Yeah.
People want to be seen. And, you know, whether you're talking to a 3-year-old about the boo-boo on his knee, to the 30-year-old whose marriage is in trouble, to the 70-year-old who just got a bad diagnosis. Be authentic. Be yeah. curious. Be kind. Always be kind. I think that has taken me further than perhaps anything else and opening those doors. I was on an airplane traveling to speak somewhere a couple of years ago, and I got upgraded to first class when they still did that occasionally. Mm-hmm. Ended up sitting next to a man that I honestly don't remember his name, but we were talking about my students and students struggling and how I would refuse to let students fail, that I would find their schedule and follow them and wait for them outside of another class and say, you didn't show up your advising appointment. I mean, one of them ran away from me one day. But I was telling him about this. Little did I know, he had a daughter who suffered from anxiety issues, and he was trying to help her choose a college. And he was a very, very wealthy man. He was coming from a vacation home on Kiowa, going back up north. And I was away speaking. The next morning, I understand he sent a courier with a $10,000 check to the college with a note that said, I met this little woman who talked all the way to New York. And I just want to support what you do.
Wow.
So, yeah.
And what I hear you saying to us and our listeners is it's about being intentional.
Yes.
Too. It's recognizing those opportunities.
Yes.
That you can speak into somebody's life.
Like, right.
But we have to take the focus off of our own issues.
Yes.
And, you know, recognize those opportunities because they're there every single day.
And be excited.
Yeah.
You know, be excited about life.
Yes.
Be excited about what you have to offer, because there's no one else who can do what you do the way you do it. And
right.
It sounds like something you put on a tote bag or a coffee mug, but it really is true. And people are drawn to energy. Mm. They're drawn to goodness. They want to be seen. And if you can be this, and of course we know as believers, what they're drawn to is that light,
right,
to that goodness. It's not
that's
you.
True. That's right.
They're drawn to that light. They're drawn to that goodness. They want that protection. They want to be part of that that goodness.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you can show that to them, and you know, it sounds like, and I want to be careful that I'm not coming off as being someone who is so good that she's shining. I want to be clear that I'm someone who has been so broken in life at points that I am held together by that goodness.
That's a very different thing.
Yes, yes.
That's a very different thing.
Yes.
So I want to be clear about that.
Well, we would love, as we wrap up this episode, if you have any practical suggestions for our listeners that would be beneficial.
Yes, I think there are a couple things that I've learned that are really helpful. I keep lists and I keep them on paper. Keeping lists is important. Keeping track, I'm trying to more and more keep a list, not simply of what I have not done, but a list of what I have accomplished every day.
Wow.
that is valuable.
So good.
That's good.
And the other thing I've learned early on, I'm trying to do better with, is learning to say no. But not a hard no, a gentle no, kind of a mushy no, which is along the lines of, I can't do this, however, I would be willing to send a check, send a cake, help do the cleanup later. So, but learning to say no in a way that is honest, but yet doesn't abandon people. Saying that is important. Yeah. And keeping time for friendships, especially as we get older. Keeping time for friendships, especially friendships with other women, and helping other women. Have that person who will pick up the phone, that person who will meet you at the coffee shop. That's important. And finally, I think that to honor what God has given that physical vessel, I think it's important to keep your health a priority, to be physically active, because I know being someone who teaches about the brain, there's something called BDNF, which is biotrophic derived factor that's only released during exercise. So walking every day, going to a yoga class, getting on a bike, walking the dog, gardening, but being physically active is something that I now recognize has been extremely important to fuel my own creativity and my own energy. That's so essential. I hope those are good practical
Very good.
Things.
So good.
Very good.
Yes.
Kelly, you have any closing
comments? Oh, we just thank you for saying yes to us. What a gift yes. to us and our listeners. Yes.
Well, Thank I'm so you. Proud of both of you. Kelly being, there's a term that goes around among my students. They're called bone babies, Dr. Bone's babies. Those girls whom I trained as teachers, and they refer to themselves as my babies. Oh. And I always called them my babies. And I mean, there are so many of them have done so well. But Kelly's clearly one of our stars, yes. mother of four, and has taught in public and private school. Now with her sister, a podcast and still running. She's crazy. But yeah, I'm just so happy to be a part of your life still, Kelly.
Thank you.
Well, every week we like to leave our listeners with something. And I just want to share Galatians 6, 7 through 9 before we leave you with something. But it says, a man reaps what he sows. The one who sows to please his sinful nature, from that nature will reap destruction. The one who sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. So really today, we just have a couple of thoughts for you to ponder about the seeds you see growing around the garden of your heart. What seeds have you been encouraged to water and tend to today? And what seeds might you need to uproot and sow new seeds? It's a great day to get in the garden, friends, and we are praying for you this week as you tend to your garden of life. So until next time,
keep walking.
Hey, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, please go ahead and follow wherever you are currently listening to this podcast. It helps us show up on the charts so that other people can find this and be encouraged by the testimonies. Thank you for listening. Rooted Studio.